Curtis Lewa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
This is the theme song of WABC's Mac Daddy, Dominic Carter. And as well, high atop Madison Square Garden. And I look out and I can almost see Pomona in the distance beyond the George Washington Bridge across the Hudson River. Almost.
Almost.
But not quite. But I'm telling you, as we broadcast on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound to all of you, courtesy of NJDie.com, I'm coming out your way tonight, Dominic Carter. Get ready.
Are you serious?
You see my Dwayne Reed bag, right? Double bag here.
Ah.
Right, double bag. Ah. That means I'm trick-or-treating in Rockland County tonight.
Really?
Raise the roof.
So you're really headed my way?
Yeah, well, first off, I got to stop on behalf of Bill Weber, also known as William J. Weber, who is our Reform Party candidate. He's running for the Ramapo supervisor seat. And so I'll be there at a rally hosting that, you know, getting people charged up. So I'm taking New Jersey Transit to Spring Valley, Little Haiti there, and then hitting Little Haiti, Spring Valley, Muncie, and then just tearing it up in Ramapo.
Wow.
And then afterwards, coming to Pomona.
So you're literally coming to my neck of the woods.
Yeah, well, you better have the lights on, because I want to see your white lawn jockey outside. And don't have that vicious pit bull terrier that you have, that Doberman Pinscher. Don't try to sick him on me when I come to the door screaming, hey, there better be no tricks. There better be only treats.
That's Dolce. That's my little Dolce.
So how will I be treated in Pomona? Because I won't get there until about 9:30, 10 o'clock.
You'll be treated like anyone else, you know. Hey, but you know what? You know what? I looked online at Twitter, and one of our followers of the show, Maritza, she gave me a great idea for how to keep you calm for the next 3 hours.
How's that?
I have Prozac? Right outside here.
Liquid Prozac?
No. In following with Halloween, she told me to bring you some candy. So right outside the studio, I have some candy to keep you calm for the next 3 hours.
You know I can't eat candy.
Oh.
Because of my Crohn's disease.
So what can you eat?
Well, you've seen it. Turkey sandwiches,
right.
And I wash it down with Gatorade, and that's the only thing I'm able to digest now. I can't digest anything else. Or, as you remember, coming in here one day and watching me pivot, turn, and collapse
it
like the Leaning Tower of Pizza.
It was bad. I never talk about that on the radio, but I didn't know if you were going to make it. And I'm serious. I'm not joking right now.
And then for the next 3 hours, I was projectile vomiting in the office while you handled the program solo.
You were, literally.
And it was bad. It was super bad. But do you know where I was this time last year?
This time, Halloween, last year.
Yes.
Where?
I was at the New York NYU Medical Center.
Seriously?
Because I had been hit with a double colitis and ileitis attack that actually floored me. So I had to spend 3 days there because I had totally dehydrated. You know, I've lost a total of about 60 pounds over 2 years. Not because I wanted to, but because I just can't eat anything and digest anything.
But you still look good, though.
Well, yeah, but don't feel good. You see, that's
seriously?
The problem. And it's interesting because at the NYU Medical Center, and he'll be there tonight on behalf of Bill Weber running for the Ramapo supervisor position as a Reform Party candidate.
You're really coming to Rockland tonight?
Yeah, we're coming to Rockland to see the guy who saved my life also, Dr. Leon Pachter, who was the head of the surgical team on June 19th of 1992 at Bellevue. That had to operate on me after I was shot 5 times with those hollow point bullets on the orders of John Gotti Sr. to John Gotti Jr. to Michael Iannotti, who shot me up.
But check this out.
Yes.
I don't do the mob thing. Let's leave that one alone.
Well, what do you mean, mob thing?
Let's leave that one alone.
All right. But you do coin, right? You do coin because the reason I'm coming to your house is you told us your wife.
Right.
Actually is extra nice to the kids and others who come trick-or-treating because she doesn't give them candy corns or apples. She gives them cash. And man.
Yes, she does. Marilyn does. She went to Manhattan College and she understands that the kids like the money, the moolah.
And so
she'll pass out the quarters, yes.
And I am going to be in need of mucho.
So wait, you're
cash.
Coming to see my wife? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, no. I'm coming to see you. But
oh, okay.
I know you're
okay,
you throw nickels.
You know how you get down, Brother Sleeper.
I know, but you throw nickels around like manhole covers. So I'm coming to see you and your wife because your wife is going to put coin in my double bag, Dwayne Reed bag. That's how much trick-or-treating I'm going to be doing.
So you're going to knock on the door and you're going to have a bunch of children dressed as guardian angels behind you?
Junior guardian angels.
I'll bring
little Anthony, who's 15, right? And how can your wife possibly not say no and give quarters to each of them, but then I want to snatch it up from them? You know, like this is Charles Dickens, right? Like I'm Fagin. Snatch it up from them because I'm in need of this scarole.
Why?
Well, let me tell you. Last night, as you can see, you were in the office. I was like three Ben-Hur brothers moving everything out because they're pushing us down the queue. Because they got to make room for some of the mockers, some suits, you know, in the Cumulus Empire.
Oh, I did notice you were cleaning stuff up.
Right. So I'm cleaning
all
stuff up.
All your papers were gone.
I know.
All your newspapers. What did you do with them?
Recycled them. I recycle everything. But as you know, I'm a hoarder.
I didn't want to say it, Brother Sliwa.
Serious hoarding
problem. I didn't want to say it.
So I'm working into the late hours at night, and I'm getting calls from Indians. You know, I'm not talking about Cleveland Indians who are upset that they're going to take Wahoo, their symbol, away, you know, Major League Baseball. I'm not talking about indigenous people of North America, you know, Native Indians. I'm talking about Indians who in Island and Edison and Jackson Heights, Little New Delhi, listen intently to this show. And they were saying to me, Curtis, this is Diwali. This is the season of lights. You must forgive and forget. You're so angry. And I said, look, I understand Robbie. Robbie is our big listener. He owns 3 Dunkin' Donuts. One in Edison, one in Island, and one down in Penn Station.
Wait a minute. What's the connection with Dunkin' Donuts and Indians?
Well, almost every Indian from the subcontinent tries to end up owning a Dunkin' Donuts puts their entire extended family to work.
Oh, come on.
Oh, yeah, so when you get your fresh buttermilk quellers that come out there, twist, yeah, it's probably Robbie there who owns one of those Dunkin' Donuts. You know, he first bought a cab.
So, wait, you're telling me that all Dunkin' Donuts are owned by Pakistani-Americans and so on?
Indians, mostly Indians, yeah.
Okay.
And what they do is they get a medallion first, yellow cab, years ago when a medallion was worth it's not worth anything.
Aren't we playing to every stereotype that there is right now?
No, give me a little Ravi Shankar music and I'll explain. So Robbie invested in a medallion, I think like $800,000, right? And he's driving morning, noon, and night, you know, and he's having all kinds of goiter issues and kidney issues because, you know, you're in a car that long, you know, with all the potholes out there, you get some serious internal damage. And then he saves enough money, and he's able to buy these Dunkin' Donuts. So the Indian fans that we have, they're calling me up, Curtis, you got to forgive, you got to forget. And I'm telling them, hey, look, I don't prescribe to my religion. You know, I am an AMP Catholic. Ashes on Wednesday, palms on Sunday, and then you don't see me for a month of Sundays. So I'm not going to prescribe to your Hindu religion where you got these 4,000 gods, you know, and they got elephant heads and they got arms and legs coming out of every part of their anatomy.
Oh, really?
I said, but the two gods that I love is your male god of war, Indra, and your goddess of war, Chamunda. I love them because I'm constantly going to war. And they say, no, 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 you got to forgive and forget. You got to forgive and forget. And I said, I can't. I can't. And so I'm schlepping all the newspapers to the recycling depot. You know, I'm cleaning out our office. And then I get an email. Oh, I get an email from lawyers of mine, of which
when,
I've had.
When did you get this email?
Oh, it's about, I'd say, 8 o'clock last night.
Okay. Email from your lawyers?
Right, right. Hey, it's been a long time since we reached out to you, Curtis. You know, you got this pending bill with us. $250,000 that you owe us. Which is true.
But wait, stop for 1 second. I thought, listening to you in the past, I thought you were joking.
No.
Until I came in here one day, and you said, you think I'm joking? And you literally pulled up the email, I won't say the law firm, please don't, because I know you will, and you showed me the bill where it was over $200,000.
Right.
I think it was $300,000 at the time.
Right.
And it literally showed that they were billing you, I believe, by the minute if they returned a telephone call to a reporter.
Oh, yeah.
They were billing you for that telephone call.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 30 seconds, and they bill me for the minute. You know, they gave me no slack. Like they give nobody slack out there. So these vultures, these buzzards are contacting me.
Wait, who's the vultures?
The lawyers.
The lawyers. You're referring to the lawyers as vultures.
Oh, vultures, buzzards, hyenas, predators of the worst type.
All lawyers?
Yeah, most. Okay, most. So anyway, so they're preying on me last night at 8, and they say, we want our money. We want it now. You know, like they're like a leg breaker, an enforcer, right? And I said, I've always told you guys, you'll get your money when I get mine. You know I get paid the same rate, the same way. 80% of my money goes to child support. Now, I know that's not the normal formula.
Wait. Isn't that a little too much information for the radio?
No, because I've told the story before.
And are you serious? 80% of your salary goes to child support?
Yeah. So the point is they're aware of this because they were in court when judges in Queens County and Manhattan decided, guess what, tough noogie, Sleeway, you figure it out. So it's 80% for 3 kids. All right, I accept that. You know, I don't like it, but I accept it. I got to deal with it.
Lord help me.
So they are aware of all of this. So then I inform them, because they've been away for a while, that I've been meeting with surgeons at Columbian Presbyterian. I'm going to have like half my stomach taken out, end up with a morphine pump, and a colostomy bag because I got some really serious issues.
Very serious.
So you know what he writes back?
This is the lawyer.
Yeah.
Okay, what?
We were there first.
Are you
first
serious?
We are first in line. We are first in line, not the surgeons. Now, you could imagine at that point, my blood pressure must have been 220 over 120.
I can imagine.
If their law offices were open, you'd be reading about me on the front pages of today's tabloids.
And we would.
I would have killed them. I could not believe the insensitivity. The bedside manner of these lawyers completely sucks. So then, when we come back, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story because it even gets worse.
Is that possible?
Yes. To show you how these buzzards, these vultures, these hyenas, these vipers operate. And I'm going to give you some assistance if you're getting screwed by lawyers, which I know a lot of you are. Get a pad and a pen because I have a very dear Kumbhada CHF friend who has dedicated his whole life to going at these vultures and buzzards. The lawyers out there. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Just want to celebrate another day of living. I just want to celebrate.
1228. So, Dominic, you would say my most important focus now is getting through this very complicated surgery that's going to have to remove half my stomach, give me a morphine pump, and leave me with a colostomy bag.
Of course, there's no doubt about it. That's priority number one.
Right, I have Crohn's disease, and the intestines have just been ulcerated especially from the shooting that I incurred back in 1992. So,
but wait. You're 63 years old.
Correct.
You look pretty good. So I have to ask this question as a journalist for the record. Have you ever had plastic surgery?
No. This is my Polish genes from my dad's side.
And it's also not your black genes?
No, because I have no black genes. I have no melanin factor. You could see that. But it's also from getting hit in the head so many times in the face with bats, sticks, fists, that it's moved the collagen around. So it's given me that more younger, youthful vitality. And I'm not recommending that for people as a method to remain younger looking. But anyway, so I'm discussing this with the lawyer by email. He then writes back to me. He says, oh, and condolences for the loss of your mother, Frances. Now, you know that happened months ago.
Right.
And then he writes, and we see that you're selling your mother's house in Canarsie.
And how does he know that?
Well, because it's up for public sale. And they're probably scrutinizing everything to find belly button lint on me. So we would expect that you're going to pay off your bill upon the sale of the house. So I write him back and I said, hey, Weisenheimer, my father took out two reverse mortgages. If the house is sold, almost all of it goes to the bank. I mean, that's what happens when you take reverse mortgages. All three of us, my two sisters, Alita, Maria, myself, we agreed to that. If there were a few pennies afterwards, that's fine. But there's always other bills when you sell a house. And I say, guess what? If there is anything, who do you think is going to get it first? The surgeons or you, the lawyers? And once again, he repeated his line. Oh, well, of course, we were there first.
You're making this up.
I'm not. I'll show you the email. And then I said, maybe it's better that I just die and you can be first in line for the life insurance policy, right? Huh? Maybe I should die during surgery.
I don't mean to laugh, but...
Well, anyway.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And I want to help people out there because this is a problem a lot of people have with these vultures, these buzzards, these vipers, these hyening lawyers who just are relentless. There's a guy, Carl Lanciera, who formed Americans for Legal Reform. This guy has dedicated his life because he got screwed by lawyers and he knows other people, men and women who have gotten screwed by lawyers. And I've posted his video, which he is hilarious. He should be doing stand-up comedy. But he gives a lot of great advice. In fact, he one time got arrested for telling jokes about lawyers outside of a courthouse. Can you believe that? They actually had him locked up for telling lawyer jokes. And they were good lawyer jokes, I might add. Anyway, just go to the Curtis Facebook page. All you have to do, the Curtis Sliwa Show. Go on the Facebook page, and you'll see Carl Lanciera's video from Americans for Legal Reform. So I'm not just going to complain and moan and groan and sort of...
But wait, you don't drink Coca-Cola anymore, do you?
No, that'll kill me now.
Okay, so you're this worked up because of the lawyers?
No,
because
of anger.
Because of anger, because of the lawyers.
Yes, and other things.
So they want their $200,000.
250 Gs.
And they feel that it comes before the surgeons that will save your life.
That's right. They said, we were there first. Yeah, you were there first to screw me, pals. But on that note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
To the barricades, to the barricades, with your Molotov cocktails. You remember the Bernie the Altacacas supporters against Hillary in that very heated Democratic primary. Dominic Carter in the House today. You were covering that on a regular basis for your station that you can be seen on every night, RN. And if you have Fios One, 6 to 7, Monday through Fridays, giving you a commentary and news. And notice, I was one of your lead stories yesterday on RN. And as I
That's
was
right.
attacking Rob Astorino
That's
for
right.
taking the money from Reichnitz and Reichberg for placards to be clergy members in Westchester County, even though they don't live in Westchester County, and they're not rabbis.
Back to Astorino in 1 second. But I do give Bernie Sanders tremendous credit for this regard. He'll never be president of the United States. He'll never be the Democratic nominee. He can influence the nominee, but, you know, his time has passed. I give him credit for this. I will never forget that day in the South Bronx during the primary contest on St. Anne's Avenue, your neck of the woods. Mr.
St. Mary's
Sliwa.
Park, he was.
That's right. That's right. For him to come out, and I saw blacks, Latinos, lots of whites. Lots and lots and lots of white people from throughout the tri-state area in the middle of the hood to attend an evening, not daytime, an evening nighttime rally for Sanders. I give him credit for that.
And one of the benefits is as the hipsters and millennials were walking through the neighborhood on their way to that South Bronx rally for Bernie for president, they started looking at those old buildings. Gee, high ceilings. Wow. Boy, this would be a great place to colonize. Gentrification will be coming to the South Bronx because of Bernie, the Altacaca Sanders.
Will be or already?
It's slowly. It's happening a lot slower than it is.
Have you been to Harlem lately?
Yes, but it's a lot slower than you've seen in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and even the North Shore of Staten Island. But it's happening. Meantime, what happened to Bernie, the Altacaca Sanders, yesterday? Well, he got caught up in what Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, was talking about at the start of the summer.
It will be a summer of hell for commuters.
So as he was prepared to join your mayor, Comrade Bill de Blasio, in a campaign rally, guess what happened to him?
What good does it do now?
I understand, Bernie, but you now understand what we go through. He got stuck on the A-train. The A train did not move.
On the A?
He was stuck on the A train, a train you take on a regular basis.
That's right, the A or the D.
That's right.
Grew up on the Bronx from Fordham Road in the Bronx, your neck of the woods.
So you think that Bernie the Altacaca Sanders would have been complaining to Comrade Bill de Blasio?
What good does it do now?
So he took the attitude that unfortunately too many strap hangers do, which is the MTA, the money-taking agency, they raise the fares and we get less and less service.
Wait. What was that? The MTA is what?
The money-taking agency.
I like that.
They raise the fares.
That's good.
And we get less and less service.
And of all their top executives, they get cars. Don't forget that.
Oh, they get cars, yeah. And they don't use the subways.
And of course not.
Metro
That's for the
North
little people.
Or the Long Island
That's
Railroad.
For the little people.
Exactly. And yet they make decisions that actually were contrary to the needs of the commuters.
Of course.
But anyway, Bernie the Altacaca Sanders, proud graduate of Madison High School in Brooklyn, which produced the schmuck, no make that the putz, Chuckie G. Schumer, and yes, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who loves her wine and loves to go to sleep sitting there
as a
justice of the United States Supreme Court. What happened was yesterday, he was here to campaign with Comrade Bill de Blasio.
Brothers and sisters, it is an honor to be here today with one of the great progressive leaders in the United States of America, a man who must be reelected, Mayor Bill de Blasio.
Has anybody been reading the papers lately about pay for play? How can you be progressive, right, and be into pay for play, right? That would make you a hack politician, right?
Or maybe he's thankful for the time that de Blasio was supposed to endorse Hillary, but he waited and held out on the endorsement and held out on it. And remember the payback she gave de Blasio when he went to Iowa? He was standing there by himself with just his wife knocking on doors. That's what the mayor of New York City was reduced to?
Yeah, having to be out there where there are more pigs than people and slopping the hog. Suey, suey, suey. But anyway, this is what the Altacaca Bernie Sanders said about your mayor, Comrade Bill de Blasio.
That everything that Mayor de Blasio is trying to do is exactly the opposite of what Donald Trump is trying to do.
And then finally, he topped it off with this.
What the mayor is saying, let's reduce fares for working people. Let's rebuild the subway system, improve the buses, and ask the people on top to pay a little more in taxes.
That was the millionaire's tax that de Blasio
right.
keeps pushing.
Right, right.
That Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo says is dead on arrival.
Right, and it is dead on arrival. The state senate in Albany is not going to approve it. And so this is just a means, a way for de Blasio to talk to his base. It's a way for the senator to connect with his base. And that's about it. End of story. It's not going to happen.
Oh, it's not the end of this story. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. As you know, Bernie the Altacaca Sanders got stuck, as you often had, on the A-train yesterday.
What good does it do now?
Well, there's a new report out, a study. Now, they have the chutzpah to say this, that our transportation system in New York City is ranked the best in the United States.
Wait, say that again.
That the New York City public transportation system is ranked best in the nation. We have the best subway service, and we have the best bus service.
And this is based on who? Who did the study? Do you know?
Oh, yeah. It's a national survey of mass transit systems,
which include not only
urban, but also suburban, which would include the Long Island Railroad and Metro North.
So here's a tip as a journalist to our listening audience. Whenever you hear a survey stating X or Y or Z, always ask this question. Who paid for it? Because that often influences what it's going to say. Does it show who paid for this? Did the MTA pay for it? Because that's what it sounds like.
Well, could be. There was a little scuttle here, a nice little payoff. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, do you believe in this national survey that suggests that we here in New York City have the best public transit system? The Long Island Railroad is the best. Metro North is the best. The subways are the best.
Good luck with that. The bus system is the best. Good luck with that.
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Neil first up in the queue, calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Neil?
I think Comrade Bill de Blasio has the worst work ethic I've ever seen. He hangs out at the YMCA on 9th Street in Brooklyn till 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I don't understand how people voted for these people.
Okay, Neil, but let me be fair to Mayor de Blasio. Any mayor of New York City starts out early, and I understand what you're saying about de Blasio, but they go often late into the night with speeches, meetings, meet and greets. Are you willing to give them benefit of the doubt for that?
No.
Yeah, Dominic, what are you being so soft on the mayor? So you
we got to be honest.
You could have the ringside seat at the next press conference and be
Donald Trump doesn't even do that. He's up at 5 in the earlier than 5. He works the whole day.
Yeah, not only that, he doesn't go to sleep until about 2 o'clock in the morning. He only sleeps like 3 hours.
Right,
well, I'm trying to be fair. I'm trying to point to a silver lining for de Blasio.
Well,
because there are not many.
Let's look at his normal day. He gets up at Gracie Mansion at about 8:30. Now, how do I know that?
We don't know that. We don't know that for sure.
I know it, because when I got arrested serving him papers.
Do you have to go there?
Well, I have to, sure.
Do you have to go there?
Because when I arrived at 7:30 with Nancy Regula, and I reported to the head of his security, I'm here to serve papers on the mayor, and they told me, you know, just wait. You know, he's used to receiving papers, no problem. I said, is the mayor up yet? No, he's still asleep. So at about 8:30, he got up, he showered. He and his wife were jumping in the SUV, was heading to that YMCA that our caller Neil spoke of in the slope, Park Slope, that he insists that he has to get a workout at. And then afterwards, he gets a cup of coffee and a croissant right across the street and maybe strolls into City Hall at about 11:30.
In fairness, the mayor of New York has to start out early every day, even if you don't see the mayor. The mayor of New York is receiving security briefings. Why are you looking at me like that?
Dominic, what time are you up in the morning?
Today, 4:30, because I had to be in Newark covering the Menendez trial, which is going to jury soon.
De Blasio is on his second turn of Z's. He's like halfway through his night at 4:30 in the morning. He ain't getting up until 8:30.
But why are you trying to allude to? I know where you're going with this. You're going to people that smoke marijuana.
Oh, yeah. Well, he smokes fatties at night.
But we don't know that confirmed.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. On the back porch of Gracie Mansion, him and his old lady, they love Hindu Kush. He's a Kush man. And that's why it takes him so long in the morning to get up. Now, you know, others, they'll have cocktails, you know, margaritas, whatever, you know, but he just likes a nice fat doobie at night. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Andrew, who's calling from the Atlantic Highlands. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Andy?
Hey, Curtis. How are you? You know, whoever designed Penn Station was out of their mind, first of all. And secondly, they've been talking about redoing it for the last 20 years. They've been talking about it since the Clinton administration and getting
That's
cut
true.
Out of the budget every year.
That's true.
I saw you in a pizzeria down there one time. I remember we were talking about it a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it's a third world station in which 700,000 people pour out each day to go to work and to shop and to come to the city. And another 700,000 pour down at night to go home into the surrounding suburbs. And if you
they have single file escalators. Single file
yep.
escalators. And they announced a 6:15 train at 6:13. And then you have 7,000 people trying to go down a single line escalator. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, tonight, you know, right after the drive home at 5, I got to jump on New Jersey Transit and head out to Spring Valley because I'm going to be out in Dominic's neck of the woods, you know, trick-or-treating in Pomona late at night. Before that, I got to be out there as Reform Party chairman in New York supporting Bill Weber's candidacy for the Ramapo supervisor position. But, yeah, and it's always delays. There's always signal problems. There's such mishigash in Penn Station. You say, this is a first world city with a third world station, Penn Station.
I'm glad you say that because it almost reflects our airports to a degree. I know you're a world traveler. The best transportation system I've ever seen in my life. Now, this was many years ago,
yes.
was in Japan.
Oh, yeah,
they,
Tokyo.
Tokyo. And a brother wasn't comfortable with that bullet train. I rode the bullet train from Tokyo to Osaka and then
yep.
back to Tokyo. I wasn't cool with the speed of that train. I just closed my eyes. But their regular train system, it seemed to move very fast. What's been the best you've encountered?
I would say compared to New York City, London is far superior.
Yes.
Tokyo
but
superior.
But all those tunnels to go down into in London.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because it's old, and they don't always stay up with the main. Moscow, superb subway system, where there is a museum on almost every station that would knock your eyeballs out that could compete with the Museum of Natural History.
Curtis Sliwa. Boom! The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Way down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil.
7 minutes after the hour of one.
You can't get
Dominic Carter in the house today as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. And the reason we play that intro music of Frank Sinatra, who I hate, I loathe, I despise.
Why?
Because he was hooked up with organized crime. Westchester County Playhouse there with Carlo Gambino and all the Gambinos, my enemies there. You know, he couldn't have been happy. He couldn't have been more for toots.
Okay, you know where I live at in Rockland, there in Pomona.
Yeah, I'm coming trick-or-treating there tonight in Pomona.
There are no lights at nighttime, right?
It's so, okay. You'll be able to see me because I'm a caucasoid, my white skin.
Oh, you sure about that?
Oh, yeah.
But what I'm trying to say to you is that there are certain things that unless we can prove it, let's not talk about.
Don't worry about
and
it.
And the mob happens. You love to talk about them.
Of course.
You would think by now you would say leave it alone.
Well, I love talking about Matt Dahl, who I always thought was a coffee boy when I first came here at WABC, like Donald Trump is calling Papadopoulos, who is now a cooperating witness.
And wait, you know, I have to give you credit. As soon as you heard about Papadopoulos yesterday, you were the first one to point out, look out for this guy. This might be the key to all
of this. Oh, yeah, because I've worked with the feds before. Remember, 4 trials against John Gotti Jr. So I
know how
the U.S. attorneys work. But anyway, a shout out to Matt Dahl, who I originally thought was nothing but a coffee boy here at WABC. I had no idea he was operations manager. But he just moved the rest of the office because, you know, there's still a lot there.
It's clean.
And it looked like I moved it. So that right of college education was really worth it. I hope all those student loan payments he keeps making now, actually end up benefiting him in the future. He could end up with his own moving and storage firm there down in Red Bank, New Jersey. Anyway, high five for doing a great job there.
Yeah, it's empty.
But
the office.
Yesterday, we were talking about the indictment of the pig, the Hazarite, Paul Manafort. Notice no one's come out and said he was a class A number one guy.
But wait, why?
Except for Roger Stone.
Allegations, but why are you calling him a pig?
A Hazarite, because he was obviously out for the money. He didn't care who he dealt with. He's dealt with dictators, brutal monsters who've killed their own people. And naturally, most recently, puppet of Vladimir Putin, who was the president of Ukraine. He took millions of rubles, parked them in a bank in Cyprus, and then money laundered. But that'll come out in federal trial if he doesn't flip, and his business associate, Rich Gates. But when we learned that the foreign policy advisor, one of many that Trump had during his campaign, a guy named Papadopoulos, not only was indicted, but was cooperating. And I said to myself, when you're cooperating, when you get a break,
you know what that means.
As opposed to looking at jail time, because he lied to the FBI about his involvement with Russians. He
was major no-no.
Right. He was contacting Russians. He was dealing with Russians. And unless you believe it was independently and autonomously on his own, or he was doing it on behalf of Team Trump, that's where the intrigue is. But knowing that he is going to testify now, or being willing to testify now, it is incredible that there are people who are demeaning him, like the former, actually, campaign advisor to Donald Trump, Michael Caputo.
And to think that a 27-year-old amateur foreign policy analyst is someone that's going to rise to the top of the Trump campaign defies credulity. I have no idea why people would think that a volunteer coffee boy like George Papadopoulos would get to the top of this campaign.
Well, first
it's
all,
wishful
other than Manafort,
thinking,
Michael.
And it's going to be proven wrong.
Did anybody tell Caputo that at an editorial board meeting with the Washington Post that Donald Trump signaled out Papadopoulos as being an excellent guy, a guy who knows what he's talking about?
That's a problem. That's
so
a problem.
How is he all of a sudden a coffee boy? And then Sarah Huckleberry, the spokesperson.
Wait, Sarah what?
Well, she's a real Huckleberry. Knock off the old block of her father there, the former governor of Arkansas, Huckabee. Anyway, Sarah Huckabee, she was talking about Papadopoulos yesterday.
It was extremely limited. It was a volunteer position. And again, no activity was ever done in an official capacity on behalf of the campaign in that regard.
What about the outreach that he was making to campaign officials to try to put together this
meeting?
You mean
that outreach that was repeatedly denied and pushed away and said we're not going to take any action on that?
Can you explain what happened with his outreach?
He reached out and nothing happened beyond that, which I think shows, one, his level of importance in the campaign, and two, shows what little role he had within coordinating anything officially for the campaign.
He's just a coffee boy. You know, he'd go out and get the coffee. Hey, you want cream? You want milk? How much sugar? You know, sweet
right,
low, right?
Right,
just
right,
a coffee boy.
Right.
Then Sarah Huckabee went on to describe Papadopoulos.
The big difference here is you have a meeting that took place versus millions of dollars being sent to create fake information to actually influence the election. You compare those two, those are apples and oranges. What the Clinton campaign did, what the DNC did, was actually exchange money. They took a meeting. Those are far different. And one is pretty common practice in any campaign to take a meeting. The other one is actually paying money for false information. That's a big deal and a big difference.
Okay, now there's a time and a place to discuss that, but she was being asked about Papadopoulos, and
right,
I guess she ran out of
references. It's called deflection. It's called deflection.
He's just
deflect,
a volunteer.
Deflect.
He's a coffee boy. He's a
Curtis,
person of no consequence.
Curtis, let's be very clear about this. There, mm-hmm, there's a plus and a minus to the campaign that President Trump ran. When you run a campaign on a shoestring budget, as he did, there's a plus and a minus. The plus is Trump redefined American politics as we know it, that it can be done on a shoestring budget. The negative is when you run that type of campaign, as President Trump did, you count on low underlings and they're put and thrust into major roles, roles that they would not normally have in a traditional campaign. So Papadopoulos would not be some type of advisor or talking about meetings with Russia in a traditional campaign. But it could very well be the case that he did exactly what he said he did for President Trump. And remember now, why is the president focusing on him all of a sudden? Why? Why has the president turned on him in 24 hours? Why?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because they're nervous in the White House.
Of course they're nervous.
Because when the feds get you to flip and cooperate,
you flip.
That means they wire you up like a Christmas tree.
That's right.
So for months, Papadopoulos continued to serve coffee at all the meetings. You want sweet low, sugar, milk, cream. And he was recording their conversations. So even if you want to badmouth him, demean him, lowball him, and claim that he was just, a guy who would fetch coffee, he was wired up like a Christmas tree. So if he got into conversations with people about, hey, you know, I know this guy in Russia, or I know this professor that he was dealing with who wants to hook us up with damning information about Hillary, you know, right from there may have been other people wired up in that room. And you know what happens when two microphones are together?
The noise we're listening to right now.
Yeah, you get the static because there's so many microphones in a room. The feds are so confident. You look at Mueller, right? He's not responding
at all.
They're confident because they know their game plan.
And they know what they have already.
Team Trump can only imagine what they have. And now that they see the coffee boy got wired up like a Christmas tree to record conversations, of which the feds now have, was anyone else cooperating who they had reached out to unbeknownst to Team Trump? And that's where the concern has to be. So you could demean people, you could badmouth them, but having seen in four trials against John Gotti Jr. how the feds operate, how they flip people, how they get cooperators, how they wire people up, and not only do they tape conversations that you're having with body mics, but on your own personal cell phones, or if you still have the old-fashioned landline.
Remember, I saw that firsthand, the way the feds operate, with Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos. In terms of Adam Skelos on the phone, the son of Dean Skelos, talking about, I wonder if the feds are listening. They're probably listening now. And he almost fell out of his chair when the feds played that back in court, Preet Bharara, approximately a year and a half later. So you are correct in terms of the way the feds get down. They don't play.
And remember, there was a assemblyman that other fellow Democrats said was a person of no consequence, Nelson Castro from the Bronx. They said, oh, he's never been to committee meetings. He knows nothing. Preet Bharara got hold of him, flipped him. He wore a wire for 2 years in Albany. And he was able to record conversations about all the whining, dining, and pocket lining that sent quite a few of those legislators to jail.
I contend to you this point. If Papadopoulos didn't have the goods, the president wouldn't be denouncing him. The president of the United States knows what Papadopoulos knows.
Well, the more serious issue is how consumed is the president with this Russian investigation by Mueller? John Kelly, his chief of staff on Fox News Channel yesterday, explained it.
It is very distracting to the president, as it would be to any citizen, to be investigated for something while at the same time trying to carry the weight of what being president of the United States means on his shoulder.
How much time does this take up for him?
Well, you know, he and I have, as you might imagine, multiple conversations a day. Generally, in the morning when we first talk, it'll be about these kind of things, just general conversation before we get down to business.
And you know the president is obsessed with this. As he gets obsessed with matters that just dominate his thought process and his discussions. But meantime, the big fear of some is that he might try to fire Mueller. And Jay Sekulow on CNN, his attorney, said, don't worry about that.
Is there any chance, Jay, is there any chance at all that the president will try to fire Robert Mueller?
No, I saw a couple of people talking about this morning, and the answer to that is no. The president is not interfering with the special counsel Mueller's position. He's not firing the special counsel. He said that before.
So I'd like to find out from our many listeners, if they think the president should pull the trigger on Mueller, since he has issued his first wave of indictments, and you know that's just a signal of more to come. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Mike, who is calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Mike?
What's up, guys? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween.
Same to you.
Why were they investigating them to begin with? For what reason? Why did the investigation start?
Well, the investigation, remember, the investigation was triggered by the firing of James Comey, the
that
FBI director, by Trump, and the recusal of Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, in this investigation to see if there was Russian collusion with Team Trump during the campaign. And now, obviously, it's expanded its horizons, and it was given the okay by the assistant attorney general who was appointed by Donald Trump. So these are all Trump people.
Not an even playing field, my friends.
But the wounds are self-inflicted by the president. If he did not fire Mueller or the FBI director, he would not be in this position.
But he's entitled to do that. He could do that if he wants. And if the rules do apply, and if it's self-inflicted, then why isn't everyone else falling down?
All right, well, Mike, the question is, should he fire Mueller?
I already think that he's tainted. I thought that from the beginning, but they're not going to do anything. It doesn't seem like they're going to do anything. That's going to cause more of a problem.
Oh. Of course it will. How many special prosecutors are you going to go through? This president.
No, I would let him stay.
I agree with you, Mike. This president is very unconventional. That can be good. That can be bad. If he didn't fire the FBI director, this process was coming, but it would not have been as expedited as it is now.
No, because Jeff Sessions would have blocked it.
And you
would have done everything that he could have to block it.
This is just the beginning.
Well, look, Mike, I've suggested that we have a special prosecutor for all the nonsense that Hillary was involved in her campaign in trying to acquire information. What's fair is fair. There should be two separate investigations, and let the investigators lead us to what is fake news or real news.
Another day in America. God bless. Happy Halloween.
Same to you, Mike.
Our number is 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Dominic Carter in the house. And we asked our audience, is it time for Donald Trump now with the first wave of indictments, others to come, to fire Special Prosecutor Mueller? Tyke is weighing in from New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Tyke.
Hey, Tyke.
Yes, Tyke.
I'm not going to ask you how you're doing because you're going to give me the same old, you know, I have better days. But, Dominic, I want to tell you, you're very entertaining as Curtis settles in on his next radio squeeze.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Tyke. So what do you think about this issue here?
Well, has anybody read the book, The Art of the Deal?
I've glanced at it, but go ahead.
He's given everybody in this whole situation enough rope to hang themselves. Now that Mr. Mueller has laid out all his cards on the table.
He hasn't laid all his cards on the table, but go ahead, Tyke.
Well, he kind of has, but he's not going to fire Mueller. He's going to let him go. He's going to say, listen, your investigation is over. You're excused. Simple as that.
And I mean, you know what that will trigger. In fact, let's go to what Senator Lindsey Graham said yesterday. If the president should either try to let Mueller go or fire him.
Talking to foreign governments when you're a nominee of a party is okay. What's not okay is receiving help from a foreign government. I don't think it's okay to pay a foreign intelligence officer money to go to a foreign country to gather intelligence against your opponent. But at the end of the day, what would bother me the most if a campaign associated themselves with the Russian government, actively sought assistance from the Russian government or any other government, that would be bad.
So, Tyke, the problem here is you have Republican senators who want to see where this investigation leads. If the president were to try to sack Mueller, there could be a move to impeach him.
Well, here's the the other thing, too. As a citizen that votes for, and keep in mind, I vote for people that are going to get things accomplished for me, and I'm sure you do the same thing.
Sure.
But as somebody who votes for people that want to see, I want to see Obamacare reformed. I want to see taxes reformed, okay? I want results. If this whole thing is going to be a hindrance or a distraction to the guy I put in office to get things done for me, I want him out. I don't want any distractions. And the same thing goes for business. If there's a distraction in your business, get rid of it.
Well, the way you get rid of it is you come clean. And remember, there are many members of the Trump administration who can't seem to even remember meeting with the Russian ambassador Kislyak, Sergei Kislyak. Jeff Sessions alone met with him three separate occasions. He couldn't seem to remember that. That doesn't trouble you?
Curtis, so I'm being sarcastic here.
Yes.
You and I were on the radio at noon today?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember that. I don't recall that. Mm-hmm. My recollection is fuzzy.
Well, you know who has the other recollection problem? She always has to have her memory nourished, which her husband was very good at doing with Betty Curry. Remember, and the cat socks about Monica Lewinsky. Remember when Bill Clinton had to tell Betty Curry, I need to nourish your memory about that. Hillary Rodham Clinton, who always seems to forget, vacillate, not remember, oh, the uranium deal, oh, the DNC and us paying for the dossier. There should be two special prosecutors going at each of these folks simultaneously and let all the information come to the surface. And those that are guilty, then they need to get locked up.
I hear you, but there's only one president of the United States.
Yeah.
And the allegation against Hillary Clinton, while it's serious, that's secondary right now. We're talking about the current president of the United States.
Secondary, but remember that dossier was provided by the Russians. So if you're going to say Trump was colluding with the Russians to get dirt on Hillary, well, we know the DNC, Podesta, and Hillary were doing likewise. So I think you have to be fair, because if not, then you have partisan people who believe you're just going after Trump.
It'll never go away. True story here.
Yes.
You mentioned impeachment, you know, Monica Lewinsky. I will never forget, I was about to go live on television, and three or four producers are coming to me with the documents of what Bill Clinton allegedly did in the Oval Office. And I'm saying, can we say this on television? Mm. And they're calling up the lawyers, the allegations of what he did with that cigar and so on. Seconds before air, I'm like, what do we do?
And remember, what he did with that cigar to Monica Lewinsky in the West Wing of the White House was while Yasser Arafat
was on the phone.
No. Yasser Arafat was outside on the Great Lawn with Rabin and I think Perez. And they were delayed because Clinton was fiddling Monica Lewinsky with his Cohiba cigar.
That's a good way to put it. But imagine four producers, they're on the phone with the lawyers, we're 1 minute from air, and what can I say as to what he did with his cigar?
Well, right now it's more important what Ken Duffy has to say about the news headlines and updates.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
.139 and the continued cloud that follows Kevin Spacey, star of your favorite show on Netflix, House of Cards.
It is my favorite show.
But ever since he acknowledged dry humping a young man when he was 14 years old, who turns out to be Anthony Rapp, one of the stars of Star Trek Discovery on CBS.
Is that what we're officially calling it now?
Well, the way it was described by Rapp, and Kevin Spacey is saying he doesn't remember because he was drunk.
Of course he doesn't remember. How convenient.
But we knew that there would be other allegations that would then start coming out.
You did predict. As a matter of fact, you said that yesterday on the air.
Although, he is telling the truth when he says he is bisexual. If you remember, Kevin Spacey was saying, I've had relationships with women, as part of his explanation of why he's now outing himself and coming out of the closet.
Had you heard the rumors? I had never heard them.
Not about women. So I thought that he had said he had had long-lasting relationships with women.
You thought it was just relationships.
I thought it was just with men, right?
Okay.
So now we see that he has scored the trifecta. He is a perv against women, a perv against men, and a perv against boys as a pedophile.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm a little confused. How does he meet the definition of a perv against women?
All right. A former Boston TV anchor. You may well know her. She was on the CBS station there. Has said that what happened was is that she was at a luncheon with Kevin Spacey. And her friend, a female friend, was a real Kevin Spacey fan. And while she was sitting there, Kevin Spacey assaulted her. The actor sat beside her, plied her with booze, then went underneath the table and, you know what, diddled her right there at a crowded luncheon. So this CBS reporter, whose name Unra, decided to post that and let the whole world know about Kevin Spacey, the perv.
Okay, wait a minute.
When it comes to women.
Not denying that it happened. And I still don't understand what he allegedly did. So I don't know if you can clarify any further here. But, it's rather convenient to make all these claims all these years later, because we know that if you file these claims, it's not even going to court. Lawyers for these high-profile clients are going to settle the case. You're going to walk away with at least a six-figure paycheck.
All right.
And possibly millions.
But now it continues. So a Nadine West tweeted that a young male pal had worked with Spacey at the Old Vic, that's in London, and was groped by the actor. Spacey was apparently always known as one to avoid, men were told, and boy actors, when you see Kevin Spacey coming, avoid his presence because he's going to try to grab out and reach you and yank your three-piece set. And the three-piece set is not the knife, the spoon, and the fork that you generally use when you're sitting down to have a meal.
Well, the allegation with the friend of the anchor in Boston, you said that he did what? I'm trying to fully understand.
Well, he is accused now of doing exactly what the president, Donald Trump, was accused. Remember when he was at the club and apparently diddled this young lady who claimed that it was unwanted at that point.
Mm.
You know, where he put his hand under her dress and violated her. So apparently Kevin Spacey, according to this Boston reporter for CBS, she was a well-known anchor there, plied her friend, her female friend, with a lot of alcohol, got her ginned up, and then diddled her.
Maybe I'm a little off here. Do you know guys that do stuff like that?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're guys, they can't keep their hands to themselves.
But I mean, actually put their hands up a woman's dress. You don't know what you're going to find when you put your hand up there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are a lot of guys that I've known who have done that and think they have a license to do that. Think they have a freaking license to do that. I got to tell you, there was a guy I remember. I was at an after-hours club in the South Bronx in my heyday when I'd go out dancing in the wee hours of the morning.
Would you be the only white guy there?
Yes. Yeah. The only white guys who would be there are the cops who came in to bust the place because he was breaking every rule in the book. But there was this guy. He was a Cuban guy. And he diddled this woman right in front of me. And then I knocked him out. And I had the whole club that was ready to house me.
I can imagine.
And I had to get out of there quick.
Real fast.
But it didn't matter to them that this woman was violated. It was unwanted. It wasn't like she was necking with the guy, that they were in an amorous situation. He just came up and grabbed her by the pee. You know, it was what the president was talking about, remember, with Billy Bush that time on Access Hollywood.
So guys really do this?
Oh, absolutely. Not a lot.
I've never seen this before. I'm not trying to act like I don't know what's going on. In the news business, I've seen guys approach married women. I've seen married women have affairs. I've seen all types of things when alcohol is passed and we're all under pressure and it's the middle of the night and, you know, in entertainment. And remember the oldie lanes and so on?
Yes.
So I know of these things, but I have never in my life actually heard or seen somebody walk
well,
up
let's find out.
And grab a woman by her private
let's
part.
Find out from our many listeners out there. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And the bigger question is, as the people who have produced and directed House of Cards said, this will be the last season. We're in production now. We're starting like the first episode of 13 episodes, and then we're folding the series.
Right. That's rather convenient after season number 6, and the show was basically, they were still filming,
yeah,
but the show was basically dead
but
anyway.
With this avalanche of information coming out about Kevin Spacey, even to the point of the wackadoodle Rosie O'Donnell saying, hey, tweet it out, we all knew. Well, Rosie, if you all knew, you didn't say anything. You know, Rosie used to be a neighbor of yours there in Rockland County, you know, in her compound.
She lives in Nyack.
Right.
Wait, why did you call her? You called her a wackadoo?
She's a bit of a wackadoo.
Why did you say that?
Well, if she's not on her meds or if she's not hanging upside down in a closet, you know, she's a little difficult to deal with. You know what I'm saying? But the point is that she's tweeting out, we all knew about you, Kevin Spacey. Yeah, well, if you all knew about this guy perving women, men, and young boys, how come none of you did an intervention? You all just sat back knowing this?
I'm just asking this question. Would you ruin your multi-million-dollar salary to come forward?
To come forward?
And acknowledge what someone else did?
I would have done it. I would have done an intervention with him first.
You know what? I believe you. I really do. Because I don't know if I would come forward and admit this. But knowing you the way that I do, you would go up to the person, whether they were black or white, no matter how tall they are, and you would literally start a fight with them.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
And have the police call.
But in this case, in the Hollywood fraternity and sorority, if they knew this about Kevin Spacey, because apparently this was well known, then you intervene first. You say, man, it's got to stop. I don't know if you got to go to rehab. I don't know if it's an alcohol issue. But Kevin, we ain't tolerating it anymore.
Okay. But let's be real, Curtis. He's a multi-million-dollar talent generating billions of dollars. Who's going to tell him that?
Well, that's the problem. You see, if you're a person of substance and worth, you get a pass. If you're doing this and you don't have two nickels to rub together, you get locked up. Let's go to Glenn in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Glenn?
What's up, man? How you feeling?
The problem is...
Nobody's ever stepped to these guys, their fathers, their boyfriends, a friend. I tapped a young lady on her butt when I was 12 years old. That may have been 50 years ago. She brought her father to school the next day with his butcher apron and his black gloves. And that straightened my monkey ass out. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. Her father was a butcher?
Brother. And
wow.
She told him that I had just said something to him. She turned around and said, if I had told him you had touched me, you'd be dead by now. That cured me.
Man. Did he have the cleaver in his hand at that time?
No, sir. Just his big bald head and the arms look like the side of a tree, Doc.
Oh, man. Boy, that straightened you out real quick, right, Glenn?
I tell my sons, if you touch anybody, I'll punch you out and then the father will punch you out. I learned my lesson. That's what they got to do.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
you know how us guys are. We're going to try to push the envelope, and we're going to try to get away with whatever we can until somebody steps to us, and it usually has to be a man who goes, nope, that ain't going to be tolerated.
No, I learned my lesson, man, and women shouldn't be touched like that. You don't want to be touched, you know.
Hey, Glenn, help me out here.
Yes, sir?
Have you heard of guys that walk up and, as the president said, grab him by the, you know what? Do you? Because I don't know any guys like that. Seriously.
Look, I'm damn near 70, but this happened back 50 years ago. Yeah,
okay.
Guys used to tap girls on the butt.
No. I didn't say the butt. Do you know any guys that walk up to, I don't care if you're 70 now and you sound great, man. You sound like you're 30 or 40. Do you know any guys that walk up to women and just say, hey, and then grab them by the you know what?
Grab them by the crotch, yes, sir.
Yeah. So you do?
Yeah.
Inappropriate. Yes.
We would call it, they would grab them by the poo-tang.
Yeah,
right.
Easy, pal.
Yeah,
right. I'm not going to use that term, but
that's the common terminology that was used.
Right.
I would have beef with these guys. What the hell did you just do?
Yeah.
And then the crowd would turn on me like, what's she doing in a place like this?
Blaming
as if she's
her.
To blame for Man. Being in that after-hours club. 1-800-848-WABC. Feet don't fail me now. I had to get the hell out of town.
Actor Kevin Spacey made sex pass when I was 14. I'm not into that. That's not a big deal. Not a big deal. I don't think that's a big deal at all.
Well, That's Michael Savage, who follows us. That was his response yesterday to the fact that Kevin Spacey was dry humping that 14-year-old boy, that actor. Can I hear Michael Savage again on that?
Actor Kevin Spacey made sex pass when I was 14. I'm not into that. That's not a big deal. Not a big deal. I don't think that's a big deal at all.
You know, there are allegations about Michael Savage years ago that he may have crossed that line, too.
Not going there.
Just allegations, but...
Not. Why do you always have to push it? There are certain things that we shouldn't say.
I'm just suggesting that why would you give Kevin Spacey a pass when his own production company today has now just announced they are suspending the filming for the final season of Netflix pending an investigation of all of these charges about Kevin Spacey. But Michael Savage, he doesn't have a problem with it. Maybe birds of a feather flock together. Who knows? You know, I'm just wondering out loud here. Huh?
On. Curtis Lewa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
If heaven ain't a lot like Dixie, I don't want to go. If heaven ain't a lot like Dixie, I just as soon stay home.
7 minutes after the hour or two, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden and the great facilities provided for us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. When I hear music like that, Dominic Carter, I say, hee-haw!
I'm glad you said it.
Get the sheets. Get the rope. Well, I mean, let's face it, for a long period of time, south of the Mason-Dixon line, where they fly the stars and bars, the flag of trees, and the Johnny Red flag, there were some guys who would literally say that. And I say that because I was in Forsyth County with the Guardian Angels. This is outside of Atlanta before it's changed. It's now changed incredibly as that urbanization has spread. You know, the sprawl has spread.
That's the word we're using?
Yeah, urbanization. Because you're getting hipsters, millennials, blacks who are moving from the Atlanta base out into the surrounding suburbs beyond Marietta. But to Forsyth County, where, man, it was like at times you were in Deliverance. And we were out there. Because
I'm glad you're saying these things.
Right. A number of civil rights protesters had been out there and they had been stoned. Literally, people in the area had thrown rocks at them, had damaged them. And they said they were going to come back. And all of a sudden, the GBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and the state police, they weren't going to be at their side. So they asked us if we would accompany them. Our Atlanta chapter and our other chapters came together. And let me tell you, they were playing that Dixie music. They were drinking up, Captain and all other drinks, you know, their local gin mills. They were riding around in their pickup trucks, flying their Johnny Red flags, and they had a number of, let's just say, demonstrative ways of saying how they'd like to hang us from nearby trees.
But not all people.
Nooses.
Not all people.
No, but the Johnny Rebs did. The Johnny Rebs. So every time I see people conjuring up images of the old Confederacy, I get the worst images imaginable. I say to myself, you mean the traitors? The ones who fought against the Union, who wanted to break?
Really, that's really your feeling? Because when I see it, it doesn't bother me one way or the other.
Oh, yeah. They're traitors. They were traditors. They tried to destroy our country. They wanted to break from the Union. And so last night, Chief of Staff John Kelly, who you would think would have enough business just trying to manage the President of the United States because of his manic depressive ways, and he acknowledged that to Laura Ingram on the Fox News channel before that, weighed into the whole controversy of whether the Confederate statues, memorials, and commemorations should stay or should go. And he seized upon the image of Robert E. Lee, who led the troops in the South against the Union in the Civil War.
I would tell you that Robert E. Lee was an honorable man. He was a man that gave up his country to fight for his state, which in 150 years ago was more important than country. It was always loyalty to state first back in those days. Now it's different today. But the lack of an ability to compromise led to the Civil War. And men and women of good faith on both sides made their stand where their conscience had them make their stand.
So loyalty to state, according to his interpretation of history, was more important right before the Civil War than loyalty to the Stars and Stripes. Well, I want to advise Chief Kelly that he needs to study history and know that even though Virginia was a gray state in the Civil War, there were a hell of a lot of Virginians who fought on the North side. Whole families were divided because that was a border state where you would have brothers. Literally, one brother would be fighting with the Confederacy with Robert E. Lee. The next brother would be fighting with the Union with Ulysses S. Grant. And at Appomattox, when the troops met and the peace was made between those two generals ending the Civil War right there in Virginia, there were families who had members on both sides of that battle. So how does the Chief of Staff Kelly say that loyalty was more important to your state before the Civil War than it was to the United States of America? I'd like to ask our audience if, in fact, any of you believe that propaganda. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
I believe that we should give General Kelly the benefit of the doubt, considering his longtime service to America. You also have to understand that whenever he speaks, he's not speaking as a regular American. He's speaking as the chief of staff for the president of the United States, in this case, President Trump. And so he's got to toe the line on talking points. I think that most reasonable people would be upset at his use of the word compromise, that they weren't able to. So compromise on what? Instead of us being 3/5 of a person, we should be 2/5, 4/5, 1/5. Compromise on what, General Kelly? That's the offensive part. I understand the point that you're making about the states and so on, but how dare he compromise? Compromise on what?
Well, would that have meant to Dominic Carter you would have been half of a person instead of a whole person?
Be careful.
Is that
careful.
What Chief Kelly would have agreed
even,
to?
Even Chelsea Clinton tweeted about this, and she says the Constitution, I'm quoting her now, the original 3/5 compromise was an abomination. I think if you ask anybody of color, what do you think of that? We would not be too pleased with that.
No.
The way it originally stood.
Would a Webster-style Henry Clay compromise, because they were the big compromisers in that era in the U.S. Senate, would it have meant that, okay, some states can keep slavery? Would it have meant that? Is that what this was? It should have been a compromise instead of a civil war?
I see exactly where you're coming from. And that's why I say that perhaps we should give General Kelly
No, I give him no benefit of the doubt. He knows better.
He has to know better. It's offensive what he said.
I understand. But if you just look at the history of commandants at West Point, one of them was Robert E. Lee. So he was in the North. He was at Fort Hamilton for a while, right where there's now the discussion of taking down placards, you know, on the street signs in Fort Hamilton, the Army base there, to both him and Stonewall Jackson, because they both served there. So they were well aware of Northern ways and Northern concepts and Northern beliefs as part of this great America. They chose to side against America. They are rebels. They are traitors. There is no other way of describing them. Compromise.
Preach.
Anyway, let's go to the phones. 1-800-848-WABC. First up in the queue is Ray, who I believe is calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Ray.
Hey, Curtis, how are you?
I've had better days.
I think you're, I hope you're just doing this to stir a little controversy, because if you're as big a historian as you say you are, you would know that part of the reason that the Civil War started was because of states' rights. Lee was with Virginia. Most of the Southern generals were, in fact, American soldiers. And when the time came, they sided with their state.
Okay, Ray, but let's cut through the chase here. Quoting General Kelly, the lack of the ability to compromise led to the Civil War. What does that mean to you?
That means that Buchanan, who was the president at the time, couldn't get the politicians to compromise on what the issues were.
A compromise on what? What was the big issue?
Issues back then was slavery and free states versus the Southern.
Right. So, I appreciate you being honest, Ray. So what is there to compromise about here?
Well, it was more about states' rights. The Emancipation Proclamation came about after the battle. I forget which battle.
But Ray, what would the compromise have been about slavery that would have satisfied you to prevent a civil war, Ray?
Me? I wasn't there then.
No. But put yourself in that position, because Kelly has done that for us now. What could a compromise have consisted of over the issue of slavery, which was a key component of why the Civil War took place?
I don't know what would happen.
The South wanted to preserve slavery. That was one of the reasons for the Civil War, right?
Correct. And that's part of their state's rights that they fought for. But most of the soldiers, 9 out of 10 soldiers.
You're not answering the question, Ray. Why do you not answer the question about slavery? What could a compromise have been? What would you have allowed maybe the most southern states, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, to maintain slavery and maybe the border states not to? Would that have been a compromise?
That's what they were trying to do. Me, personally, I would have outlawed it.
You would have had to go to war, because that was part of the reason for the Civil War. They were not going to get rid of slavery in the South. They made that very clear.
That was also the state's rights issue.
So we're going to disguise it and put perfume on it and say state's rights instead of call it what it is, a compromise over whether or not a black person was a full person or not, or whether or not to continue with slavery. That's the bottom line.
Let's go to Rich in New York. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Richie Rich.
How are you, sir?
Have had better days.
I want to talk about states' rights. It was so important to understand in those days that there was no, although there was a national government, it was in Washington, states' rights were everything. You didn't consider yourself part of the United States. To a degree, you did.
Excuse me. When Robert E. Lee was the commandant at West Point, he took a pledge, an oath to the United States of America, not to the state of Virginia, correct?
Absolutely. Listen, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Okay.
But the ability of someone to know that they were... I just can't explain to you exactly.
All right, well, explain this, because Robert E. Lee was from a border state, Virginia, and you are familiar that there were families broken during that Civil War in Virginia. Some of the men fought with the North. Some of the men fought with the South. So why would certain men in Virginia fight with the North? They weren't mercenaries. They weren't being paid to do that as Hessians. They believed in the country and preserving the Union.
Yes.
Okay.
And some people wanted to preserve the Union, but they believed in slavery, which, you know, listen, where you can't take somebody from today and put him back 100 years ago.
But you acknowledge it was all about slavery. So the ones who fought for the Confederacy wanted to maintain slavery. That was one of the key issues.
But the more important issue right now is in 2017, the chief of staff to the president of the United States says that this was all about the lack of the ability to compromise.
But remember, Sarah Huckabee, the spokesperson for the president, said we should never question a general like Kelly.
That's what she said. And based on our last caller, I guess we should just go back to the good old days.
We shouldn't question General Kelly because he's a general.
That's what she said.
Because we didn't have military experience. You didn't serve. I didn't. So we don't have a right.
But wait. Now, you know I predicted Trump's victory.
Yes.
But the last time I checked, he didn't have military experience as well. As a matter of fact, he had a number of deferments.
Well, I guess he's exempted on that also. Anyway, let's go to Ted in Poughkeepsie. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Ted.
Hey, Curtis, I know you and Dominic don't want to hear it, but the last two guys said about state rights, listen, that's how it was back then. You were more connected to your state than you were to this amalgamation called the United States of America.
Ted, you're going to get your say. Ted. So there was this little thing called black people that you could just do what you want, right? Right?
Knock it off, Curtis.
Hold on. This is liberal. Conservatives believe in states' rights, that it's more important than the federal government than the union. Is that what you're saying, Ted?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Well, then why do you say it's a liberal thing? This is freaking loyalty to the country, Ted. No. They were rebels. They wanted to sack the union. They wanted slavery.
Curtis, you're turning red. Calm down.
Traitors.
Calm down.
You know how many Americans died in the Civil War because
of
the South?
It's okay. It's all right.
Ted, you should go to Gettysburg, Ted.
Ted maybe just doesn't have it right
States
here. Calm
rights.
Down.
States
You're as
rights.
Red as your jacket right now. You're a 63-year-old man. If it doesn't, Curtis, if it doesn't bother me and I'm black, why is it bothering you?
Because I guess I'm blacker than you in more ways than one.
Good point.
1-800-848-WABC.
New podcasts are up now at WABCRadio.com from Sid on Sports.
Big news in New York.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa. 77 WABC.
227. You know, Dominic Carter, as we discussed what Chief of Staff Kelly said in extolling the virtues of Robert E. Lee last night on the Fox News channel. The president, you said he speaks for the president.
Of course, Chief of Staff.
Which president does this president most admire from the past? Andrew Jackson. He went down there, remember, to the House in Tennessee. He paid homage to him. He fashions himself as Andrew Jackson. And all these historians here were telling me I'm wrong. It was a period in our history called nullification, in which South Carolina, again, at the forefront, was bolting from the Union and causing all kinds of problems for the federal government. Andrew Jackson was president at that time. So the first thing he did was rotate in and out of Charleston, the capital, Union troops who were loyal, as opposed to those who were disloyal and showing tendencies of wanting to be rebels. And then he brought the U.S. fleet outside of Charleston. And if necessary, he was ready to bomb the hell out of Charleston if they didn't undergo the nullification, which ended up in a crisis that only put off the Civil War years later. That's why, remember when the president was talking about Andrew Jackson. He said, if Andrew Jackson were around, there never would have been a civil war. Well, he couldn't have been more hopelessly wrong.
Well, I understand with protecting one's heritage and legacy. I don't have a problem with that at all. So to me, the removal of the Columbus statue was a silly argument. I understand how each side feels. Perhaps the place is a museum. But in the year 2017, why is the president's chief of staff dividing people? That's all this amounts
because
to.
Because he's playing to the base, the Trump
right,
base.
To what
As
the president
you heard,
wants.
One of the callers said, my point of view of declaring Robert E. Lee a traitor, a rebel, is a liberal position. A liberal position?
So am I, as a person of color, a liberal position?
Liberal. You're with Barack Obama, lock, stock, and barrel, because you're black.
That's why people say that?
Yeah.
Ah.
See, you're not permitted to have this is such a partisan country. You're either with us or against us.
I see.
And you can't argue historical points because it's either our way or the highway. But let's go to Bob, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Bob? Well, Bob is no longer there. Let's quickly go, if we can, to Charlie, who's calling from Westchester. Welcome to WABC, Charles.
Yep. Listen, Curtis and Dominic, I think you both better be doing a little bit of reading before you make statements about the Civil War. The cause of the Civil War initially was economic. It had to do with tariffs. It had to do with the fact that the federal government wanted to impose certain tariffs on the South, whether it was cotton or other.
And how about the free labor, all the slaves doing the free labor, Charlie? You excluded that.
No, I didn't exclude it. I said that was an afterthought. That did not become an issue until much later.
Oh, no. The South wanted to maintain the free labor. Come on, Charlie. Come on. Can't you at least acknowledge that?
The cause of the Civil War.
Calm down, Curtis.
Was due to economics.
Charlie, you're turning Curtis beet red right now.
Now, economics, meaning if I get free labor, because Dominic is in the cotton fields.
Wait, why I got to be in the cotton fields?
Well, back then, it wasn't only black.
This is the year 2017.
But let's say you were in the cotton fields picking out the boll weevils out of the cotton that you were harvesting.
I don't think I would make it back then.
That wasn't costing.
I wouldn't make it back then.
I know, but that wasn't costing.
Because I'd be leading the rebellion. I wouldn't have made it back then.
Okay, but there were others, obviously, who were free labor.
And I would have been successful with that rebellion.
All right. But there
underground
were others who were fueling the economy in the South because of their free labor. They were called slaves and indentured servants. So that's what the South wanted to maintain. White indentured servants, sharecroppers, and slavery.
And the president's chief of staff is talking about this in terms of a compromise in the year 2017.
Anyway, on that note, there's no compromise here. I'm looking at somebody who is frightening.
Yeah, what is
Ken Duffy with a generic baseball cap on.
Yeah, I see.
You don't know who I am.
With hair.
Well, no guesses? What, Dominic? I'll give you a clue. Netflix.
Okay. Netflix.
Netflix.
Netflix show. I am Dustin from Stranger Things.
Okay. All right, that's good. Are you going to come with me to go trick-or-treating in Pomona tonight in Rockland County after I finish in Ramapo? You can come with me. We'll go door-to-door.
Let's say I'd rather go to the Upside Down.
Okay.
And only Stranger Things people would know that, and somebody who knows it is laughing right now.
So wait, the Upside Down is, should I ask or I shouldn't ask?
It's a place you don't want to go.
Really?
I'm trying to find Dart.
Exactly. Don't go there, Dominic.
Upside down. Don't go there. Okay, I'm going to leave it alone.
Thought I'd lighten the mood. Come in.
But give us our news headlines and updates.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
God, this pedophile on a pedestal, Michael Jackson. You know, I want to come behind the studio window here, the bulletproof glass, and pimp slap you. Brian Mondaluch, board operator, and you, Justin B. Love.
Do you like his music?
It gets the groove to my move sometimes.
Hey, I see you got rhythm there. I see you bobbing your head.
He's a pedophile on a pedestal. Just but like I like R. Kelly, but he's a pedophile on a pedestal.
But I see you bobbing your head. You got rhythm.
I got diddy bop. That's right. I can diddy
you
bop.
You can diddy bop?
Oh, yeah.
What do you know about that, Brother Sliwa?
Hey,
what do you know about diddy bop?
Haven't I been in jail?
Do we have to go? What is wrong with you?
Well, you got a diddy bop in jail, or the brothers will vamp you. You know, if they think you're just an okie-dokie white boy, that's it. Blanket party for you. There is definitely going to be a beatdown in your stay, whether it's 1 day, 10 days, 100 days.
You know what? I have to admit, you're right. Once I went to Rikers Island on a story, and I felt bad because they had like 8 correction officers to protect me and make sure there was no problem. And there was one white guy on Rikers Island on a ward with about 40 brothers. And the brothers were almost bragging. They said, "You see him? He's got to pay rent."
Yep.
And I felt bad for the guy, you know, because I was leaving and he couldn't leave.
Nope.
So you make a valid point.
They take his commissary privilege. They take his phone privilege. They take his hood. But more importantly.
His hood?
Yeah. You know, his manhood.
Oh. I'm not going there.
Now, interesting, Dominic, you mentioned Rikers Island. I remember one time I was being housed at the Tombs and it was overcrowded.
Seriously?
Yeah. Because back then, they would arrest me when the cops hated us, the Guardian Angels, and they would lose my paperwork. And it would be like maybe 72 hours, 96 hours later before I'd surface.
So wait, you would be in the Tombs with the brothers?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, banging away. Because, you know, the COs, the correctional officers, the screws would actually parade me through and say, hey, look who we have here, superhero. Guy wants to lock you all up. Anybody want him in your cell? Yeah, me in my cell.
You're serious right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, right away, I couldn't go to sleep.
So the COs would dangle you as human bait for them.
Oh, sure. Bait. And they would they would hope that we would start fighting. Now, most times, guys waiting for arraignment, they don't want to get into fights. They just want to get in before the judge, you know,
Curtis, knowing you the way I do, you would be the guy starting the fight.
Oh, yeah. If you mad dog me and you eye fornicated me, I preemptively would hit you because I know what was going to follow. So anyway, one time I'm housed in the Manhattan House of Correction there, the Tombs, and it's overcrowded, so they shipped me to Rikers Island. And the one thing in my time on Rikers Island was the COs, the correctional officers, they're always eating breakfast. I don't know what it is about breakfast on Rikers Island. Yeah, because, you know, the inmates make the breakfast in the mess hall. But the correctional officers, because they eat the same food as the inmates get, they're always eating breakfast. And a lot of these correctional officers were ordering, like, extra breakfast. So they were, like, more pancakes, you know. I'm saying to myself, God, I wouldn't eat this stuff unless I had to. And the COs, they're, like, eating it up. Like, man, it was like a five-course top-shelf meal at a fine restaurant. But anyway, that's Rikers Island. That's a different topic for another day. This is about how millennials and adults have stolen Halloween from the kids. Think back when we were kids going out trick-or-treating. Did you ever see adults wearing costumes at that time?
No.
Now, do you realize that more adults purchase costumes for themselves, and especially the millennial generation, the hipsters, than they do for children in the country?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that would explain why there are Halloween stores with costumes for adults.
Oh, yeah. And naturally,
and big money.
And naturally, you're going to all kinds of Halloween events, you know, whether it's business related or social related or to people's houses. And it's no longer one day. Remember back when it was one day, Halloween. There was Devil's Night the night before, in which you went around and you terrorized people. And sometimes you burnt down their houses if you were down in Camden or Detroit. But other than that, that was it. It was really 2 days. Devil's Night, the Mischief Night, the night before, and then it was Halloween. Now it can sometimes last a week, like this weekend. The one train, the two, and then three train were not running on Friday night. Par for the course for the MTA, money-taking agency. See, everyone had to walk over in Times Square to the A, the C, and the E line. It was packed. Almost every second adult there was dressed in Halloween garb. They've stolen Halloween from the kids. And I want to bounce that off of our many listeners. Have you detected that, as I have, as a baby boomer, and as Dominic Carter has, that it's no longer the kids' holiday that it was meant to be? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Well, I mean, I guess because my kids are older, I don't really look at this anymore. But is it as much a festive event as it used to be, in terms of, I don't, unless the kids are at the mall trick-or-treating, I don't really see, they may knock on the door here and there. I told you we give them quarters, but it just doesn't seem to be the old Halloween that we used to.
Well, you know what was interesting? If you stayed out a little too long trick-or-treating, Mischief Night bled over into Halloween Night, because then the thugs would come out. And remember, they would walk around with athletic socks.
I remember that. Yes.
Hit you in the back of the head.
You really are from the hood.
Oh, yeah. Hit you in the back of the head. Okay, that wasn't the worst of it, because that would just leave, you know, the chalk dust all over you. But some of them would put, like, a Yale lock in there, you know, that you would use on a locker or a rock, and then hit you in the back of the head, and down you'd go. You'd take the count.
See, I recall that, but all I remember, to be honest with you, is when I lived in Seattle, Washington for a while in high school, and was on the high school football team. If we had a game the next day, the cheerleaders might put toilet tissue, or whoever, the boosters, whoever, would put toilet tissue in all the trees. But I don't really remember Halloween that much. Wow. Why are you looking at me like that?
You're sort of like our politicians, you know, like de Blasio can't
remember
meeting
don't
with Reitnich. Jeff Sessions couldn't remember
meeting
with the
Russian
ambassador.
But you got to give them credit in terms of slickness at our expense. I don't recall. I don't remember.
Dementia
I have no recollection.
Hmm. But you remember the toilet paper in the trees.
I do remember. You come outside and the houses.
That was part of Mischief Night and Halloween Night, or Devil's Night as it existed in some areas.
I don't like the term Devil's Night.
Well, the reason was Devil's Night in Camden and Detroit is they tried to burn the town down. 1-800-848 WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Josh in New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Josh.
Hey, guys. How are you?
I've had better days, Josh.
No, I'm sorry about that. when it comes to the costumes, you know, my wife dressing up like Supergirl for Halloween with our daughter, and I don't mind. She can dress up as Supergirl all she wants.
How old is your daughter?
She's 7.
Okay.
Now, is your wife going out and trick-or-treating with your 7-year-old daughter?
Well, she's not collecting candy, but we're going out with her.
All right, is she in her costume, her Superwoman costume, your wife, when she's doing that?
Oh, yeah.
See, she's Bogarting the kids.
I don't mind, because that means I get to have fun with her in the costume later.
You see, I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to be the one to say it, because Superwoman is sexy. Let's keep it real here. I mean, I didn't want to say it, but that's exactly where my head was
going. So, Josh, while your wife is out there dressed as Superwoman, awaiting for your daughter to finish her trick-or-treating with her friends, you're fantasizing about having sex with your wife as Superwoman.
Pretty much.
Do you really have to go there, Curtis?
Does that really get you off,
Curtis?
Josh? I mean, that get you Jones?
It's a really short skirt, man.
Josh, I have to give you credit for keeping it real here. In terms of Superwoman, Catwoman, do you realize how sexy they are? Now, and these women put on these little short skirts? I mean, woo.
Wait a second, though. Batgirl, if I remember correctly, was
Catwoman?
A lesbian.
Oh, wait a minute. Why did you go there?
No.
That's a curve out of left field.
I'm not the greatest comic book aficionado in the world, but I believe, I stand to be corrected, but I believe that Batgirl turned out to be lesbian.
That's almost like what I heard, I think, about Big Bird. I mean,
Big Bird, you mean the mayor, Bill de Blasio? That's
no,
what Paul Dito
Big
calls
Bird,
him.
Big Bird, the Sesame Street character.
Whoa, he's gay?
Yeah, I heard. That's what I heard. I don't know what it's based on. Maybe it was Ernie, one of them.
Was he running away from Kevin Spacey when he did that cameo appearance?
Aren't we talking about Halloween in the final minutes left of this show?
I know.
I'm more impressed with the conversation of his wife, because I didn't want to say it in terms of her being Catwoman. And, you know, that's
well, let's,
cool.
Let's
that's
go
cool
to Bob, who's calling from New York. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC.
Oh, hey, Curtis and Doc, how you doing today?
Hi, Bob.
Listen, Curtis, you remember back in the neighborhood, right?
Yes.
Now, did you remember bombing? We used to call it bombing, throwing eggs all day at each other.
Oh, yeah.
That was the tradition back in the 80s.
This is what we used to do. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Take the Barbasol fan. Do you know the trick? We used to rig the caps. We used to make the shaving cream shoot like 30 feet. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is what I used to do, Bob, with my cousins, Joey Cheech, the Cheech from Howard Beach, Joey G, and Lenny Beans Bianchino. We'd go to the Canarsie Market area, which is right off Foster Avenue, and we would steal grosses of eggs because they'd have them out. They'd sell a gross, so we'd steal the eggs. And then we would bomb the MTA buses that were going up and down Remsen Avenue.
Why would you do that?
Well, you'd hit the bus. Some kids would throw rocks. We would just throw eggs.
And so what if the bus had an accident because you're having fun?
No, this is what happened. A lot of the bus drivers back then, they didn't take no nonsense. They had a big stick behind them when they were driving, and they came out with their you-know-what stick, I'm not going to use the word, and came chasing after us, and they would have whooped us like there was no tomorrow.
They would have whooped you guys?
Yeah, but, you know, we
whooped.
Had a... We had
not spanked. We whooped
us, and we had our PF flyers on, so we were flying. But that's what we used to do with the eggs, hit the MTA buses. And boy, those bus drivers never forgot us, because then when you came on that bus the next day with your pass and put the nickel in, they said, did you throw an egg at me yesterday?
Wait, I got another question. What do the kids use now for bus passes? You just jarred my memory. Back in our day, you would have a bus pass that, you know, you shouldn't lose.
You know what? You know
what do they
use? You know what they
get
use
a Metro
now?
Card?
They take a toolie out and a gun and they say, I ain't paying. And the bus driver says, not my business. 1-800-848-WABC.